And our theme verse for this has been 2 Corinthians 3:18. We all, with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. God is stretching us so that we will fit more of the imprint of Jesus. That's why this stretching process is happening in our lives. But sometimes we find ourselves in a place where we feel overstretched. And that's what we're talking about today. And we're going to look at Paul's own story of being overstretched. Have you felt overstretched? Just a little over a week ago, I was at the sushi bar, and I put a little something on my plate that looked interesting, and I got seated, and I took a bite of this condiment. I'm a condiment kind of guy, so I was sort of a sucker for this, and I got a pretty good healthy dose of wasabi. And I did not know about wasabi, but I found out real quickly about wasabi, and all of a sudden, this kind of a horseradish effect, you know, where your nasal passages kind of open up, and I was looking a little bit on the internet about it. It says it can be even painful, and I think I experienced that. And it was like all of a sudden I just thought, what is going to happen to me here? I'm going to maybe faint, or I'm going to have a heart attack or something if this just keeps going. Because, you know, it's like this rise of something happening. It's like, where is this going to stop? You know, am I just going to pass out, or is it going to recede and I'm going to be able to, okay, that was an interesting experience. And thankfully, with some other guys, I didn't, you know, pass out or something, and managed to make it through. But for a moment, I felt like I'm in over my head here. I didn't know what I was getting into, and I'm like, this isn't, you know, I feel like out of control here. Something's going on that's just way over my head. And sometimes in real life, that's what we feel like. What's going on is we feel like I'm in over my head here. And perhaps that's how Paul felt. We know in chapter 1 that he talked about being utterly burdened beyond his strength and despairing of life itself. I mean, here's an experience where Paul is just saying, things are just so bad, I just wonder if I'm going to make it. I wonder if I'm going to make it. And he describes other experiences throughout this book of 2 Corinthians that no doubt made him feel overstretched. And now we come to chapter 12, where he describes one of the most challenging times for him. Paul uses this occasion of writing 2 Corinthians to defend his authority as an apostle, because some false teachers had come into the church. They had kind of brought sort of this disrespect toward Paul, and he felt that it was important to put out a defense, but he does so reluctantly. He didn't really want to have to defend himself, and he goes about it in an interesting way. You might expect that Paul would talk about his accomplishments, and in one way, he talks about kind of the things that he was involved in for the cause of Christ, but those were things that he suffered. In chapter 11, which we won't read, he just went through this whole like listing of things that happened to him, like beatings and imprisonments and shipwrecks, all because of his calling as an apostle. But what's interesting is what he does say that he will boast in. He says, I don't have that verse for you. He says, if I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. How many times have you said, when you felt like you needed to defend yourself, you said, well, I want to tell you about my weakness. And that's what Paul does here. And it's going to be interesting because today we're going to see why his weakness was actually something that he could be proud about or could boast of. So let's look at this passage. what Paul does, beginning in chapter 12, he speaks of being taken up into paradise. But he does so in a way that sounds like he's referring to someone else. And let's see if I can get back to the story here. So beginning in verse 2 of chapter 12, he says, I know a man, and he really seems to be talking about himself here. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven, up to paradise. Whether he was in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. And I know that this man was caught up into paradise. Whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. And he heard things that cannot be told, which man may not utter. On behalf of this man I will boast, but on my own behalf I will not boast, except of my weaknesses. Though if I should wish to boast, I would not be a fool, for I would be speaking the truth. But I refrain from it, so that no one may think more of me than he sees in me or hears from me. So to keep me from being too elated by the surpassing greatness of these revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from being too elated. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. So we're just going to consider this part of the story to start with, Paul's story. And so as we're reading through this, about all these revelations that he had and this amazing experience he had of being caught up into to paradise and seeing things he couldn't really talk about. And then this experience happens where he was given a thorn. He was given a thorn. He said, so to keep me from being too elated by the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh. The word thorn means a stake, not a S-T-E-A-K, but a S-T-A-K-E, which is a sharpened wooden shaft. What was it? We don't know, though there have been many, many conjectures as to what it might have been. We don't know if it was physical or took some other form. We just don't know. But again, because Paul wasn't specific, it's been useful for followers of Christ of all ages. I don't mean like from 3 years old to 90, but from way back in time to the present time of all ages, to see the particular issue that brings weakness into their lives and to see that represented in Paul's thorn. And it would seem that each of us have something, some challenge, some problem, some ailment that is a thorn, a stake that humbles and brings weakness. I'm just going to keep calling it a thorn because every time I say stake, I'm afraid you're going to be thinking about dinner today. So we'll just stick with thorn. And we don't know what Paul's thorn was, but we know that it was severe enough that he couldn't just simply, we might say, grin and bear it. He desperately wanted it removed. But we do know some things about the thorn. We know that it was allowed, or it came into his life by God's permission. Because nothing happens to us that hasn't first passed under the inspection of our wise and loving Heavenly Father. That doesn't mean he's the author of it, only that he has permitted it. If we can kind of go back to the scene where Job was on earth, then we have this scene in heaven that takes place where Satan says, yeah, you've got that servant Job down there, but I bet if I mess around with him, you know, he won't continue to serve you. And God permits that. He allows that. But it really didn't come from God. God was not the author of it. We're going to see pretty soon that Satan really was behind it. Paul mentions how God, though, was going to use and was using the thorn for a couple of reasons. One, it says right here, to keep me from being too elated, to keep him from becoming proud because of these revelations that he had been given. You know, he could start to think, man, I'm really, you know, this is really great, and I'm really great because I got this special experience. And so God used this thorn that brought weakness into his life to be something that would keep him from becoming too proud or too elated, as it says here. But it would also teach him something else, and that it would teach him the sufficiency of God's grace. And we're going to get to that a little bit later in the passage here. But it was going to teach Paul, the thorn was going to teach Paul that God can provide grace that is sufficient for the need that he had. And he had to experience the thorn for him to understand that. So first of all, Paul was given a thorn. And secondly, he recognized that his clicker wasn't working. There he goes. He recognized it as a messenger of Satan. He said, so to keep me from being too elated by the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan. So Paul helps us understand that Satan was behind this thorn. Satan was not content to leave Paul alone. Paul was just being used mightily of God, and Satan just said, well, I can't do anything with him. But no, he said, let's see if we can trip this guy up. Let's see if we can do something that can bring discouragement into his life. Let's see if we can do something that can bring defeat or despair into his life. And whereas we don't want to go to the extreme of seeing every thing that happens that's bad, that happens to us as Satan at work, we can say that we do have a real enemy that has an interest in bringing discouragement and defeat and despair into our life. And we just need to understand that or recognize that. The things we're going through are not just what you can see, just not the physical things around you. There is an unseen world at work. There's an unseen force at work. And we just need to take that into realization about our lives. And Satan wants to do the same that he did to Paul. He wants to do it in our life. But God can take what Satan means for harm, and he can overrule it and use it for our good. Paul didn't say here, well, this happened, and man, I was just defenseless. I couldn't do anything. And, you know, God wasn't able to help me. He said, this came against me. It was a messenger of Satan, but that was not the end of the story. And it's not the end of the story for us either. So Paul was given a thorn. He recognized it as a messenger of Satan. And he was harassed and weakened by this thorn. He said, again, so to keep me from being too elated by the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan, to harass me, to keep me from being too elated. Satan was using the thorn to harass Paul. That word means to strike sharply with the hand or the fist, like a physical beating, to cause physical impairment, to torment. Satan wanted to use the thorn to inflict, as we said, discouragement, to inflict defeat, and to inflict despair. You know, have you experienced something where it just felt like somebody just, you know, took their fist and just slugged you a good one? I don't mean physically. I mean, maybe that did happen to you, but I'm really talking about in your life, in just things that are happening. Something happens, and it feels like that's just what happened. You got slugged. You got hit so hard, it just about knocked you down. That's what Paul is describing here, this harassment. Paul said this thorn not only brought this harassing thing, but it was an unwelcome, brought the unwelcome guest of weakness into his life. This idea of a powerlessness, a limitation, even is a word that's used for disease, a lack of confidence and a feeling of inadequacy. It encompasses the entire scope of human incapacity. You know, None of us like to feel that. I mean, we like to feel capable. We feel like to feel, I'm up to this. I've got strength for this. I can manage this. I have the capacity to deal with this. And Paul said that just, that was not what was happening. Instead was this weakness that came into his life. You know, sometimes you just feel hemmed in on every side. You feel like everything is drained out of you. You just feel like you don't have the competence that's needed to face what's going on, this thorn that you're having to deal with. And this is what the thorn was doing to Paul, and no wonder that he wanted it removed. And that's what he did. He prayed or pleaded with the Lord to intervene and to remove the thorn. He said, three times, I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. Now, Paul didn't offer just up a casual prayer. He just didn't say, well, I kind of mentioned it three times, you know, in my prayer before I had a meal, like, Lord, you know, if you just happen to think of it, it'd be nice for this thorn to be taken away. It says that he pleaded with the Lord about this. He pleaded to God for deliverance. Now, Paul's prayers were often followed by great results. I'll just give you a couple examples. In Acts chapter 16, about midnight, he and Silas, they were in prison. They were praying and singing hymns to God. They were praying, just notice that. And the prisoners were listening to them, and suddenly there was a great earthquake. Now, I don't know for sure that the earthquake came because they were praying. But it seems interesting that they were praying and then the earthquake came, the foundations of the prison were shaken, immediately all the doors were open and everyone's bonds were unfastened. Now again, maybe there's not a direct correlation here, but there is in this next instance in Acts chapter 28. And this was after Paul was shipwrecked. He was on an island, and he said in the neighborhood of that place were lands belonging to the chief man of the island named Publius, who received us and entertained us hospitably for 3 days. And it happened that the father, Publius, lay sick with fever and dysentery, and Paul visited him and prayed, and putting his hands on him, healed him. So Paul was given, through his prayers, amazing results. So when Paul prayed, things happened. But this time, Paul prayed and nothing happened. And he didn't pray just once, but he prayed three times. That doesn't sound like a lot, but probably that means there were severe occasions when this thorn especially acted up. And Paul was just in this desperate place, and he was pleading with God for deliverance. Reminds us of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane praying three times that this cup, he said, would pass from me. This experience of suffering would be something he'd not have to go through. Sometimes we're in that place of praying earnestly and praying persistently for God to deliver us from something. Many years ago, when Luke, our oldest, was just a young guy, he had childhood asthma. And as a result of that, from time to time, he'd have an asthma attack. We had medicine for that. We kind of knew how to deal with that pretty well. But on one particular Saturday, we were having something special at church for the entire day, and we had someone else watch Luke. And Luke started to have the symptoms of asthma, but the person didn't really recognize what was going on. And by the time we picked him up at the end of the day, he was severely into an asthma attack. We immediately took him to the emergency room. And it took a little while in the emergency room for them to kind of get up to speed. And they were giving him medication. His body at that point, his metabolism was just going through that medicine so fast that he'd have some temporary relief, but he'd still go right back into that asthmatic condition. And finally, they had to admit him. And the doctor was, again, trying to administer this medication to break the attack. And we were just beside ourselves. We didn't know, you know, what to think. And at one point, we asked the doctor, and I don't know if he understood my question or exactly what, but he said, well, he said, if things don't change, it doesn't look good. Now, I don't know if he meant, you know, this might be the end or what, but when I heard him say that, I just started walking the halls of that hospital, just praying, you know. I was not ready to let my son go, and I was praying and pleading for God to spare him, to bring deliverance. And maybe you've been in a similar situation where there's something so hard, so difficult, so tough, that you were just pleading with God. And this is our first response to anything that brings weakness into our lives. We might call it resistance. We resist it. We want it removed, and we pray for deliverance. And it was legitimate for Paul to pray for that. It's legitimate for us to pray for that. No one wants to be in the grip of a painful experience. So we pray, Lord, take it away. And often he does. And he did in Luke's case. We came back, and the very next blood test that came back on Luke showed that his body was beginning to receive the oxygen that it needed. And the attack had been broken. And though he stayed a day or two in the hospital, he was able to come out of it fully okay. God heard our prayer. He answered our prayer. He brought deliverance. But it's not always the case. It's not always the case that that is what happens. Paul received an answer, but the thorn was not removed. God heard Paul's prayer. God answered Paul's prayer, but he didn't answer with the removal of the thorn. It just says, let's start with this part of the verse. But he said to me. That but stands there saying it didn't come out exactly as Paul wanted. There's a but. Paul's experience with not having the thorn removed teaches us a few things. It teaches us that there are times when God allows you and God allows me to experience pain and weakness. It's just part of what he's going to allow to happen in our lives. And he's not going to just immediately remove it or take care of it, or maybe it's going to be something we're going to have to live with for a long time. And we just have to see that that's part of how God sometimes works. He has something going on that we may not understand at the moment. We also learn from this that we can't predict how or when God will answer our prayers. Now, we'd love to have this thing where it just worked the same way every time. We knew exactly what to do and exactly how to approach things, and we could always get the same result. But God just doesn't work that way. We can plead and we can bring things to God and we can pray, and sometimes right away there's an answer that happens. And then sometimes it's a little longer and the answer comes, and sometimes we just keep praying and it doesn't work the same way as it may have before. We're not in the place of God. We can't predict how these things will be answered. We can learn that we're not to feel forsaken or unloved when God does not deliver us in the way that we had hoped. God wasn't sending a message to Paul saying, you know, you've fallen out of favor with me. He wasn't trying to tell him, I just don't love you as much, Paul. It doesn't mean when we go through these times that God has forgotten us, that he's somehow punishing us. He just knows, God knows, that there's something in the pain and something in the weakness that he's going to use in your life. And you have to trust him for that. You know, you just have to trust him for it. There's no way that you can just sometimes logically figure it out. You just have to come to the point of saying, God, I don't understand, but you are still God. I still believe in who you are, that you are this loving God, that you are this God who understands, this all-wise God who knows everything that happens. You know the very hairs on our head. You know the most intimate details about us. And you've allowed this to happen. You must be up to something. And we're just going to have to trust you for that. And so the answer to a painful situation is not always more faith, not always more prayer, not always more desire. God is still sovereign over our lives. He's still the one in control. And so this was something Paul's experience teaches us. There's a lot of points to Paul's story here. Let's keep going. He was promised sufficient grace to endure. But he said to me, and let's finish it out a little bit further, my grace is sufficient for you. Though Paul's prayer was not answered in the way that he requested, a promise was given to him. My grace is sufficient for you. God's undeserved favor, God's inexhaustible strength, God's unfailing supply was promised to Paul to meet the need that he had. Now, if we go back, we understand that grace is at the very beginning of our spiritual journey. In Ephesians 2, it says, "For by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not your own doing. It is the gift of God, not a result of works, so that no one may boast." We do not become a part of God's family by trying to be a good person or by doing good things. That's what I used to think. I used to think that if I just, you know, did enough good things, that those were going to somehow count with God enough that he was, you know, going to either ignore the bad things or at least say the good things outweighed them somehow. And that's sort of maybe it's a very human way of approaching the situation, that because we're just always sort of conditioned, we've got to earn things. We're just not given things. You have to earn things. You have to work for things. And we bring that mentality into salvation where God says, that doesn't work because you don't have what it takes. You can't be good enough. You can't do enough good to earn heaven, because heaven is a free gift that God offers to those who will, by faith, through faith, receive Christ and receive the salvation that he offers. So we become a part of God's family through faith, placing our trust in Christ alone to save us. And we become a part of God's family by grace. No one earns or deserves salvation. It's a free gift for all who are willing to trust in Christ. But grace didn't end the day that we became a follower of Christ. It wasn't like grace opened the door and then it was all up to us. Grace continues to be something we need, something we count on every day. His grace, his favor, his strength, his supply for our needs. And this is what would be granted to Paul, and it would be sufficient to hold him up under the pressure of the thorn. And it's enough to bear us up in our afflictions. And if these were the only words spoken to Paul in answer to his prayer, if that's all that God said, my grace is sufficient for you, then he could be resigned to being in weakness. He could endure it. He could live with it. And so could we, with the thorn that we have. If God said, my grace is sufficient for you, then we could be, we could say maybe the second response to being in weakness, we could be resigned to it. Instead of resisting this hardship that God has left in our life, we could just say, well, we can endure it by God's grace. We can just, you know, we can just be resigned that this is what we have to endure. But there's a final part of Paul's story that's really important for us to see, and that is that he rejoiced that his weakness could show God's strength. Because that's not exactly all that God said or Jesus said in this answer. He said, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect. The idea of that is that it shows its purpose, or it achieves its purpose, it attains its goal, it finds its opportunity to work itself out. God's power finds its opportunity to work itself out in weakness, in our weakness. So these words really changed the perspective that Paul had. It helps him just to see things in an entirely different way. And though he does not seek it, he no longer dreads things like weaknesses and things like insults and things like hardships, things like persecutions, things like difficulties. This is a word that means to be caught in a really tight place. He said, for the sake of Christ, he is well content. He even boasts or delights in these things. He said, for when I am weak, then I am strong. This word delight can mean to consider something as good and therefore worthy of choice. Or a second meaning is to take pleasure or to find satisfaction in something, to be well pleased, to approve. So even beyond this response of resignation, Paul came to a new place where he could say, I am well content, I am satisfied. You could even say I delight in these things, because they provide an opportunity for Christ's power to be seen in our lives in a way it can't be seen otherwise. When we think of that, you know, what a bargain that his strength could be given in exchange for our weakness. You know, we'd like to have it so that we didn't have to come to this place of being in weakness so that God's strength could be seen. But there's something about when we come to the end of ourselves, when we come to this place where our capacity is down to zero, or when we just don't have the competence that we need, that then the power and the strength of God can shine through in a way like never before. That's what happened in Paul's life. He'd learned the secret that when I am weak, then I am strong. And it's a secret that works for us as well. So I've waited to the end to give you the theme for today. And that theme is this: when you feel overstretched, you can count on God's sufficient grace. And you can count on your weakness being an opportunity to display God's strength. Opportunity of your weakness to display God's strength. So, as we close today, recognize that God has a purpose for the thorn that you've been given. As I said, probably all of us have a thorn of some kind. For some, maybe it's a little bit more out there. People recognize and understand and know. But for many people, they carry a thorn no one else knows about, perhaps, or that it's very private. It's something deep in their heart that they struggle with. And it can be anything, anything that brings weakness into your life. And maybe you've prayed and you've prayed and you've asked God, I'd really like to be free from this. Is there any way you can remove it? And it seems as though God just isn't listening. But he is listening. He has a purpose for it. And that purpose is something that you might see right away or you might not see for a while. But you can trust that God does have a purpose, that he's working out through it. He hasn't fallen asleep on your case. He hasn't somehow been caught off guard. He knows what's going on. And so he wants you to recognize that he has a purpose for the thorn that you've been given. And then secondly, believe God for the grace needed to sustain you when you feel overstretched. Now, when you're in this place of feeling overstretched, there's ways that you can respond. You can freak out. You know, you can get all anxious. You can get all fearful. And you'll not feel like God's grace is there for you. What you have to do is trust God. You have to just place your confidence in God supplying this grace for you. And that means just that you have to be in this position of resting on Him to supply what you need, instead of trying to work it out yourself or to be all anxious about it. You have to believe God for the grace that's needed to sustain you. God has promised it, and what we need to do is to believe it. A promise is there, but that promise can only be effective when you really trust in it and really believe it to be true. So you have to believe God for the grace needed to sustain you when you feel overstretched. And then look for God's power to be displayed when going through times of weakness. Look for how God is wanting to show His power in these times, because He is. He's wanting to display, He's wanting to showcase His power in an amazing way through this time of weakness for you. You know, why is the power of Christ so needed in our lives? I thought of some reasons. One is that we are in a spiritual battle, and we need God's strength in order to be victorious. You know, we can't be victorious in our own strength, but in this spiritual battle with the enemy, with Satan, we need the strength that God provides. Secondly, that there is a great deal of work left to be done for God's cause, and our strength is going to be insufficient to do that work. We're going to need His strength, His grace to do it, His power. And thirdly, when His power is seen in our lives, it attracts others to Him. There's something that people just, they're drawn to when they see God's power being displayed in someone's life. They recognize that's something they need. They need the God who has that kind of power to show up in weakness and do amazing things. I feel like this is a time of weakness for us as a church. And this is a time that we need to be looking to God to showcase His power right here. I can't tell you why, and I can't tell you, I can't tell you that there's a way to understand this, but there's something. There's something in me that believes God is about to do something. I hate to even put that out there, but there's a sense that I get when I'm praying that God just wants to do something that can't be attributed to anybody. It's just going to be a work that He does. And we're going to say that's what God's power is able to do in weakness. And I hope that you will pray with us about this very thing, that God will begin a work. God will begin doing something that all of us are going to stand back and we're going to say, that was sure not a program that did that. That was sure not a person that did that. There's only one explanation, and that is that God Himself is the author of it. He's the one that's brought it to pass. Well, what if you were given a choice? What if you were given a choice? The choice was to take the thorn away, have God take the thorn away, but in the process, you would miss having Christ's power being displayed. What if that was one of the choices? Or what if this is the other choice? That God leaves the thorn, but also you have His power rest upon you. Which would you choose? What will I choose? Do we want to live comfortable lives, or do we want to live God-empowered lives? Do we want to just ease through things here, or do we want to see God glorified? Do we want to not endure anything hard, or do we want to see an amazing display of the power of God? When we're in weakness, it gives an amazing opportunity for God's power to be seen.